Injury updates for Gordon Hayward and Marcus Smart, plus an in-depth conversation about the Miami Heat with Nekias Duncan. It's the Wednesday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go!
So hype right now. Anything's possible. I'm on mama. I'm on my baby, man. Anything's possible.
Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This is the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Wednesday, hump day, and I'm here to get you through it. John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I cover this team on a daily basis, so I hope you enjoy some of the in-depth conversations, in-depth knowledge that we're trying to give you here on the Boston Celtics on the Locked On Celtics podcast. You'll get the conversation with Nekias Duncan in segments 2 and 3, so we had a nice about 20-minute conversation there. So the Miami Heat, thankfully for the Boston Celtics, just finished off an overtime game against the Toronto Raptors. They won. Hard-fought game, 121-110. So they'll be coming in late, and it'll be a tough back-to-back for them. They just beat they just became the first team to win in Toronto, which is impressive. They've got wins in Milwaukee and in Toronto. So that's pretty big for the Heat, who are surprising people. They're 15-5 now, tied with Toronto, actually now because of the win, ahead of Toronto in the standings for second place in the East early in the season. So that's going to be a tough game, but very advantageous situation for the Celtics. The Celtics will probably not have Marcus Smart. He's listed as doubtful. Not only did he have the oblique thing, he was sick. So he did not practice on Tuesday. The good thing is, Brad Stevens says, it seems like the oblique is a more of a contusion, a bruise. But anything that limits a player's mobility there in the trunk, in the core, that you just don't want to mess with that. Because if it's sore, first of all, he's not going to be able to move well. Everything comes from that core area. And Marcus Smart's a maniac. So you don't want to push him or put him in those situations where he's going to have to push himself. It might just be easier to just miss that game and get himself ready for the next one. And like I said in the last podcast, he can miss a little bit of time here without missing too many games. They play Miami on Wednesday. They play Denver on Friday. And then they go to Cleveland on the following Monday. So two tough matchups. But then after that, eases up just a little bit. The schedule eases up a little bit. 2 days off before this Miami game, 2 days off before the Cleveland game, and then after a back-to-back with Indy Philly, they've got 5 days off before a game in Dallas. By the way, that Dallas game on the 18th has been flexed and is now a 9:30 p.m. start because it's now going into the ESPN broadcast. ESPN is slowly, seems like they're taking the Golden State Warriors off the national TV schedule, and they're flexing these games. You can go 2 weeks out, and the NBA can kind of put other games in those marquee spots. And so that this is one of them. They did two. I think they added a Clippers game a couple of weeks from now and removed a Warriors game. So that 18th, that game in Dallas, 9:30 p.m. Eastern start in Dallas. And that's going to be the ESPN game. So who knows how long Marcus Smart's going to be out on top of, like I said, the oblique thing, which I just talked about. He was sick. He did not practice on Tuesday. Gordon Hayward was at practice on Tuesday. Gordon Hayward, obviously coming back from the broken hand. I talked a lot about this over the last couple of days. The latest update is that he's starting to ramp up the contact. He didn't go through full contact practice. The Celtics, Brad Stevens said, they didn't go live on Tuesday. So there was no full contact, anything for him to go through. They went through some kind of drills, which he can participate in because defense, and as long as his hand's not getting hit, he's fine. There's no ball. There's no reaching in or any of that stuff. Just doing kind of like sort of live stuff. So he did that. He said that he did, he put it hybrid contact. He went through contact with the coaches, which is a funny quote because, you know, I did some contact with the coaches. I kind of wanted to start there. Coaches aren't quite NBA players. I know some of them played basketball prior, but before getting to that level, I just wanted to get comfortable using my left hand in live situations, which I did today. That's good. It went well, he said. And going up against the coaches, obviously, there's, you know, that's a nice soft first step. Some of these guys have played at a pretty high level, but obviously they're not active NBA players. So that's what Gordon Hayward is talking about there. It's great that he's in this position now, 3 weeks in, starting to ramp things up, go through whatever contact there is there to try and test that hand. He is not wearing a pad on the hand. He does not like wearing a pad on that hand. I don't know if he's going to need to, or he did say that there's going to be, they're going to look into a pad or a wrap, but he says he doesn't like things in his hands. It's hard to play the game with something on his hands. Now, it's his left hand, but still, you're dribbling with that left hand, and if there's a big pad or glove, you don't get the same feel. Maybe they can cut the fingers off and it's just a little bit of padding on either side, but he likes to make those passes, those wraparound passes with the left hand. And if there's something on that hand, it could impact how he passes the ball. It could impact how he plays. So I think he's going to try it without a pad. He's not close in terms of, I don't know if he's going to be back. He's certainly not coming back this week. I don't know how much practice time is going to be available to him between now and maybe a week from now, when I think we're starting to get in range of when he can play. I've been looking at that 4 week range as the first kind of test of, all right, is he coming back? So this week, even though he's ramping things up, I don't think anybody expected him to be back this week. So he'll miss Miami. He'll miss Denver. Cleveland, I'm not sure about. Like, we'll see. That's a week from, that's less than a week from Tuesday. And it didn't seem like that conversation today kind of lent itself to a return in a week. There's going to be pain, he said. I think he's going to have to go through some live stuff before they bring him back to see, like, they want to get him through a live practice to see how he can handle things. Maybe they can simulate that somehow if they don't have the opportunity to practice. The next full live practice will probably be next Sunday. So that's 4 weeks and a day after the injury. They play Miami Wednesday. They have an off day Thursday. They play Denver on Friday. They'll have an off day on Saturday. And then Sunday will be a practice. Practice and then travel. Get to Cleveland, play that Cleveland game. They probably don't need, oh no, I'm sorry, not travel day. Cleveland's a home game. So they play Cleveland at home. So they'll practice, play Cleveland on Monday. Tuesday's a travel day when they go to Indianapolis. So that's going to be, that's the schedule. So if I had to guess, my guess is, the earliest opportunity for him to come back might be that Cleveland game, might be that Indy game. That's the four-week time frame. They may decide to hold him out and go the five-week time frame because after Philly, the back-to-back, they'll have that Friday off. They may practice Saturday or Sunday. Maybe they do 2 days off and get the guys some rest and make Saturday an optional day or something and then go practice Sunday, practice Monday, practice Tuesday early before they get out to Dallas. And that'll be the ramp up for Gordon Hayward. And this way he can go through a practice on Sunday and really test it out. Practice again on Monday if it feels good. And then they can figure out if they can clear him. That would be the 5 week time frame. Christmas is the 6 week time frame. I'd be surprised if it went that long. So that's what we're looking at injury-wise. Up next, the conversation with Tekias Duncan, getting in-depth about the Miami Heat, the next opponent. It's going to be a tough challenge. It's going to be a tough game for the Boston Celtics. Some real challenges on the perimeter with three-point shooting, some challenges defensively, some challenges against that defense. So stick around for my conversation with Nekias Duncan next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
The Miami Heat became the first team to win in Toronto this season, beating the Raptors 121-110. It's their fourth win of the season over a winning team. It's a big win for them. And now they come to Boston fresh off that overtime game. And so things kind of worked out well for the Celtics here. But if you haven't been paying attention to the Miami Heat, now that you look, they're in second place in the East, and we are bringing one of the foremost Heat experts, let's say. How does that work for you? Nekias Duncan.
I will take it.
You'll take it.
Much kinder than I expected.
You can read his work on Bleacher Report, on SB Nation, Miami Heat Beat. And you can follow him on Twitter at NekiasNBA. Thanks for hopping on for a few minutes. Got to shout out Alex Kungu, by the way, who basically demanded that I have you on the show.
That is my guy. I am forever grateful. Yeah. I really appreciate the opportunity.
As I said, I'm a man of the people. The people demand it. I'm here to deliver. I'm merely a servant. So let's get into some of what we saw. Celtics fans may not be, you know, everybody's so focused on what this team is doing, maybe they haven't been paying attention. The Miami Heat are now 15-5. They're tied for second in the East, and now the Celtics will have to potentially leapfrog them. But we'll start with what we saw in the overtime, which was Jimmy Butler going completely bonkers and carrying this team. He scored seven straight points, the first 7 points in overtime. How has Jimmy Butler been for the Miami Heat?
It starts with his playmaking and his defense. And I guess it actually kind of goes hand in hand. He's a great defensive playmaker as well. He's been fantastic as a kind of as a guy that's roaming off ball. He leads the NBA in steals. He's up towards the top of the league in deflections. He's just kind of everywhere. He loves to shoot the gap that way. It's exciting when it works. Did have some, for what I saw in the overtime, did also have some gambles that didn't quite work, but Toronto couldn't hit anything from deep. But he's been fantastic defensively. Really haven't had much of an effort issue that some of the other fan bases had with him last year. So that's a positive. We'll see how long that lasts. It's a long season. Offensively, he's taken kind of a back seat as a scorer, which has been a little bit odd. He's averaging a career high in assists. He's been a really good playmaker at a pick and roll. He's kind of empowering the young guys, Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, when they're on the floor with him, kind of letting them get their shots. But he's shown, like earlier in the season against Phoenix, when he had the 30-point first half, as we saw in the overtime tonight against Toronto, he can get to the basket whenever when he wants to. The finishing's been down this year, but he just has an ability to take over a game on a whim, and that's what Miami's really been missing over the last 2 years.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with this, because that's, first of all, he's like a Pat Riley kind of guy. You know, he's got an edge. He's very happy to get under somebody's skin. He's got the balls to go out there in the fourth quarter or even overtime and be a takeover finisher kind of guy. I mean, isn't that what we were saying about Philly? Like, oh, geez, they lost their closer. Now Miami gained the closer. And like you said, the assists are up. He had 12 assists in this game, 22 points and 12 assists in the win against, the Raptors. So, in fact, it was a triple-double. He had 13 rebounds. So, hell of a game for Jimmy Butler there. But Miami having that closer is part of what makes them so dangerous. Now, obviously, of the 15-5, that they're 4-5 now against winning teams. So all five of their losses come against winning teams. And that means they were, 11-0 against losing teams. So they got fat on some of the lesser teams in the NBA, and now this is their challenge. So challenge one, they passed that. Butler's part of that. Now challenge two comes against Boston. Let's see what they can do against the Celtics. You mentioned some names there that you wouldn't expect as contributors, like undrafted Duncan Robinson now kind of coming into his own in his second year. He had 22 points in this game. You mentioned Kendrick Nunn, who was just rookie of the month, right? You got some guys here, Tyler Hero, who I know the Celtics liked and might have gone for if he was still available, has had a pretty good start to his career. These are all guys that no one really expected Miami to kind of be leaning on and to be performing this way.
That's what's making it easy to be excited about this Heat team, because as I said, Jimmy Butler's had kind of a slow start this year as a scorer, and the fact that your Kendrick Nunns, your Tyler Heroes, your Duncan Robinson kind of been holding their own as shooters and as scorers kind of makes you envision, all right, what happens when Jimmy Butler starts back finishing at the rim at a high rate? What happens if he isn't shooting 18% from mid-range when he loves pull-up jumpers? Once that comes up, then the Heat can really become scary, because the defensive foundation is always going to be there. Eric Spoelstra is going to coach a top defense. It really doesn't matter who you throw out there with him. It's the offense that's been the issue over the last 2 years. They have their closing now in Jimmy Butler. They have legitimate shooters in Robinson, Dunn, and Hero. And that's just the foundation of a really good two-way team.
Yeah, and to do it without Goran Dragic. I mean, Dragic, we came into the season thinking like Dragic was going to be – we talked about him more like a contract rather than a player. And now all of a sudden he's become a pretty important player for the Heat. And the dynamics of what the Miami Heat are going to be are changing. And I'm not hearing so much trading Dragic, but Miami is kind of like in the, are they buying? Are they selling? Kind of like, what are they going to do with their roster? Because for all of their success, their cap sheet is kind of a mess. And you just wonder, like, what's the feeling when it comes to Dragic, and maybe even we can fold in I just drew a blank, Justice Winslow conversation, because now Justice Winslow hasn't played a ton. He had the concussion earlier. So he hasn't played a ton of games, and now he's coming off the bench where there was some talk about him being a starting point guard. I don't know exactly what's happening with Miami's point guard position, but what do you see from that?
I will say from the Heat's perspective, I think they want to keep all three ideally. Kendrick Nunn has been a revelation. He's cost control. They love Justice Winslow and what he brings and how much he unlocks on both ends because of his versatility. They also love Goran Dragic. He's been a pro's pro. A steady ball handler. He's added a off the dribble three to his game over the last couple of seasons. And now that's really shown. It's really shown through this year in that bench role. For me, I feel like Goran is going to end up being the odd man out. It's partly because of the contract. It's a big expiring, and if the Heat go star hunting, they're going to need him as that salary filler to begin with.
Sure.
But also, if they are invested in Justice Winslow long term as a point guard, and they should be, and if Kendrick Nunn is real, which he seems to be at the very least a talented scorer. And he's a cost control guy who's only 24 years old. The only real thing the Heat are missing outside of like another elite shot creator, they're kind of missing another 3-and-D wing. They kind of want Derrick Jones Jr. to be that guy, but he's more of a four than a wing just because of the ball handling. So I think if you're going to trade Goran, I think you need to be in the hunt for one of those mid-salary type wings just to kind of complete the roster a little bit. I do think if he go that route, Goran's the guy you do that with.
So that'll be interesting. Just something for Celtics fans to keep an eye on as the season progresses. Because again, with success, you're not sure how a team's going to react to success. Again, the Heat 15-5. What's going to happen? Where does that change their dynamic? Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Now, they're winning a lot with defense. I think they came into this game the sixth-ranked defense in the NBA, which is really good. And I think that starts you've got a couple of defenders. Winslow's a great defender, but Bam Adebayo is like a big key for what Miami's doing this year. but on both ends of the floor. This is kind of breakout year for him.
Yeah, he's. I think he's firm. He should firmly be entrenched in most improved player talks and defensive player of the year talks. I would not put him on like the Gobert, the Marcus Smart, Anthony Davis type level, but he's probably firmly in that second tier. He's a good rim protector when Miami allows him to drop. He obviously has fantastic feet. He's able to hang with guards on the perimeter, and that switchability allows Miami to shut down a lot of possessions towards the end of the clock because you can trust him to keep a guard out of the lane and contest. He had a nice shot, a nice block shot on Pascal Siakam earlier in the game. I tweeted out that clip before I had to go back to work. But yeah, he has been absurd at all levels. He's ending possessions. I thought Miami was going to have some issues rebounding the ball with the loss of Hassan Whiteside, which would have been one of the very few negatives about getting rid of him. But Bam's held his own in that regard as well. There really isn't anything bad to say about him, especially defensively. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, he really has. I mean, I would say that while the attention is going to be on Jimmy Butler for his big overtime, I think this game against Toronto was won by Bam Adebayo and his defense against Pascal Siakam. Siakam never really could get going. He shot 35% in the night, 5 of 14. He looked uncomfortable most of the night. He had to work for everything that he got. It was really an impressive defensive effort from Adebayo. And I think the thing that, if from a Celtics perspective now, having Adebayo there, not just patrolling the rim, but being able to switch, that's going to be very difficult. You look at Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown trying to attack. They're going to have problems trying to finish around Adebayo.
Yeah, because on top of him being incredibly mobile, he has a 7'3 wingspan as well, and he does not have much issue getting up off the ground. So it's going to be tough for them, especially if it kind of devolves into like an isolation game. They're going to have their issues with him.
Yeah, so if the Celtics are going to end up beating Miami, I think they're going to have to move the ball anyway. You have to really try and get this guy out of position and try to take advantage. This is tough. I mean, they could throw out a defensive lineup that has Jimmy Butler, Justice Winslow, Adebayo, so they can really be disruptive at the point of attack. Out on the perimeter, Adebayo can switch. He can protect the rim. You really, really have to emphasize the ball movement. And now, after coming off an overtime game on a back-to-back, you go from Toronto to Boston. It's not the longest flight in the world, but it's 10:46 p.m. as we record this on Tuesday night. They're still in Toronto right now. They're not getting into Boston until probably 3 in the morning. So it's going to be a short turnaround for them. That's life in the NBA. But if the Celtics to win this game, it's going to be ball movement, pressure right away, and try and jump out to a big lead. The last thing you need to do with these guys is give them a boost of energy, because they can ride that energy if they keep it close. The one stat that I saw when the Heat are leading after one, I think they're undefeated or something like that. So they're very good when they get out in front early.
Mm-hmm. And I think the big matchup there is going to be, well, it's twofold. On one end, Miami's 3-point shooting has been really good this year. Boston obviously has been one of the best defensive teams against the three for, it feels like, my entire adult life. Brad Stevens does a fantastic job treating that. And coming on the road back to back, there may be some dead legs. So if the Heat don't have the three ball falling, that's going to allow Boston to get out in transition, and then maybe things can kind of snowball from there. On the other end, Miami does employ a drop coverage scheme. Kendrick Nunn has been shaky at the point of attack, to say the least. He started out the year hot, and then teams just kind of started using his aggressiveness against him. So this could be a very big Kemba game.
Yeah,
I believe he has a pull-up jumper going, and things can kind of snowball from there because Boston has a really good half-court defense. And if Miami can't get stops, you know, trying to generate good looks against a good defense in the half-court all night is going to be tough.
Yeah, that's going to be the key for the Celtics for sure. Kemba against if Nunn's not going to be able to navigate that pick and roll. What Kemba did against Brooklyn at home was draw Jared Allen out in the first half of the game. Allen, who's a mobile big, like, you know, so Adebayo, there's some parallels there. you have that drop coverage, okay, but if Kemba's going to be hitting those pull-ups from the free throw line, then that that guy who's dropping is not going to be able to drop as low as he normally would. And in that Brooklyn game, Jared Allen, by the fourth quarter, was up at the three-point line trying to stop. And at that point, Kemba was just like, all right, you're toast. And then he would turn the corner, cut in front of Jared Allen, and then slow foot him into fouls. And so that would be something that I think we would look for. So good call by you on a big Kemba game. The one thing that could be an advantage for the Heat here is going to their bench. And the Celtics bench has been shaky for the most part, especially as they deal with injuries. Marcus Smart might be out for this game. Gordon Hayward is still nursing that broken hand. He's not going to be back yet. So what have you seen from the Miami bench that they could maybe lean on in a game like this?
I think, well, ideally it would start with Goran Dragic because he's been their bench. He's been their best bench guy, but he's going to be out. He's dealing with the groin injury still.
Right.
So I think it's going to have to be a big bounce back game from Tyler Hero. He did not shoot well against Toronto tonight. Obviously, second night of a back-to-back, it might be tough to get him going. But he's a guy that's going to have to shake loose off screens, force Boston to kind of pressure up. Maybe that unlocks the pull-up jumper. He's an underrated passer. That was one of the things that I underrated about him coming out of the class this year. He can make just about any read that you need him to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a little fuzzy on those corner skips, but he can make basic reads. So if his jumper is going, that can force the defense to press up, and then you can get the ball moving that way once he sees the defense rotating over. They're going to need a big night from him. If Justice Winslow is still going to be coming off the bench, obviously he's going to have to kind of dictate the flow a little bit. Don't allow Boston to get out and run. Don't allow Boston to force turnovers. Just kind of keep the offense calm while Jimmy Butler sits. It's going to be those two. Derrick Jones Jr. is an intriguing matchup against Boston's front court. If he can get some offensive rebounds, some weak side blocks, he can get out in transition, I think that'll be good for Miami as well. They're going to need all the energy they can get in this game.
Yeah, now you mentioned the Celtics' 3-point defense. It's been great, generally speaking, like you said. The past few games, it's been pretty bad. Now they've let some good shooters get going. Buddy Hield has torched them a couple of times, and it's been kind of lazy. So if they're not careful, a guy like Hero can hurt them. So that's going to be something to watch for in this game as well. We can't talk about the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics without talking about our boy Kelly Olynyk.
Oh man, the shoulder just—you love to see it.
So what's been your impression of Kelly Olynyk? Have you been just as frustrated by him pump faking himself out of open threes?
Oh, buddy, that was a big issue of mine last year. Not so much this year. Oh, yes. The pump faking out of three thing has kind of transitioned over to Myers Leonard at this point, because now he just passes up all of the open looks. But Kelly Olynyk has been fine. He started out the year a little bit slow. The Heat kind of shifted more from their dribble handoff stuff to more pick and roll offense. They've also doing a lot of post split stuff. So the dribble handoff randomness that you get from Kelly Olynyk wasn't there early in the year. So you could tell there was a bit of an adjustment for him. But over the last week or so, Kelly's been great. The Heat have been outscoring teams by a bunch with him on the floor now. The three ball is falling. He's literally taking above the break threes, which is great, to say the least, because, you know, last year he passed up quite a few of those.
Wasn't just last year.
I want to be nice.
I've been pro Kelly Olynyk. Like, I like Kelly Olynyk. I think that there are aspects of his game that are underrated. But the pump faking out of open threes was always like the thing, like just shoot the damn ball. But
yes.
But if you look, like he was against Toronto, 16 points on 6 of 12 shooting, 3 of 7 from 3. I mean, he was good. He was good in that game. He's had some really good shooting nights. He's another guy that the Celtics could get torched by. But I'm sorry, you were in the middle of something with Olynyk, and I just kind of interrupted you.
Oh, no, I'm just saying the shooting has been there. The underrated playmaking has also been there. The Heat are starting to get some more of those dribble handoffs in, especially once like their second or third action in the half court breaks down. So that kind of allows Kelly to freelance a little bit, and that's his comfort zone. So he's been a real big guy for them.
So before we wrap it up, what's your read overall on the Miami Heat here? It looks like the East is Milwaukee off in a stratosphere by themselves. And then you would say that Miami, Toronto, Boston, they're in Philly. They're all in that next mix, kind of jumbled together. I don't know if you include the Pacers in that. I'm not at this point, but they're close. Is Miami for real in this mix of Miami, Toronto, Boston, Philly? Maybe people want to put Philly above those teams, or whatever. I don't care. Considering what you've seen, considering the level of competition, considering this win against a really good team, how real do you feel like the Miami Heat are? Is this legit what we're seeing?
I think it's pretty legit at this point. Like I said, the defensive foundation was always going to be there with Eric Spoelstra. You have anytime you can put Jimmy Butler, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo on the court at the same time, good luck scoring the basketball. It really doesn't matter who the other two guys are at that point. Jimmy Butler now gives Miami a guy that can swing a game or in the playoffs that can swing a series just because he can just take over on a whim. And I think that makes them dangerous against anyone. I think in terms of the actual matchups, the only team that should legitimately scare Miami, I believe, is Philadelphia just because of their size.
Yeah.
I think otherwise Miami has, they have the personnel to at least match up with the Boston. They can match up with Giannis. They have multiple guys they can throw at Giannis, even if he'll still be the best player in that series. You know, guys, Miami just has that matchup there. They have that versatility. With Philly, they have nobody for Joel Embiid.
Right.
They don't really have – I mean, Justice Winslow is a really good defender of Ben Simmons, but if Justice Winslow has to dig down to kind of help on those post-ups, then that kind of renders his effectiveness a little bit. There's just so much length in Philadelphia, and there are some half-court questions when it comes to Bam Adebayo if, like, a guy like Joel Embiid is sagging off him. Bam did make a couple of floaters tonight. That was encouraging to see him taking some shots there. But if they're going to basically guard Miami like this 4-on-5, then I'm not sure how Miami has enough offense to really dent Philly. But other than that, I think Miami can compete with anyone.
Yeah, I feel like that's we're in a nice kind of place here in the East. People will say what they want about the East, and the bottom half of the East is terrible. We know that. But the top half of the East is really pretty good, and these teams can certainly compete. Miami, one of the feel-good stories in the NBA, a little bit of surprise. I know some people picked Miami to do pretty well, but I don't know how many people had them being this good this quick. Nikias Duncan, I want to thank you for coming on. Follow him on Twitter at NikiasNBA. Follow his work. He writes a Bleacher Report, SB Nation, and the Miami Heat Beat. So thanks for coming on for a little bit.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Nikias for coming on. Great stuff there. Hope you learned a lot about the Miami Heat and what to expect in this game. Again, you can follow him at NikiasNBA on Twitter, and you've got all of the links in his profile there of where he writes. He's a great follow, so check him out. Hope you've enjoyed the show. If you're a new listener, if you're one of Nikias's followers and you're listening to the show, welcome aboard. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get Celtic stuff, you want to subscribe to the podcast, please do. We're here daily, Monday through Friday. So please subscribe wherever podcasts are available, anywhere, anything, any app that you use, it's there. All of you regular subscribers, I hope this is a 5-star podcast for you. Give me that 5-star rating, that good written review. I keep asking for it every show, but it means a lot. It really is meaningful. It's not just a throwaway thing. If you've got an opportunity to give a rating and a review somewhere, wherever, please do so. It really, really helps as people sample the show. Think about it like a Yelp review. If you're checking out a new restaurant and it's got a ton of good reviews, there's a good chance you're going to go. So this podcast is free. It's daily. But your form of payment to me is that good written review and that 5-star rating. It really, really helps. So do that and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.